are an echo of who I am.
Oh, the music.
Yeah, tell him who you are.
She's back, baby. Give him the forecast.
Dude, oh, God,
the head
that
twisting
head.
I loved. I love the head twisting. Yeah. Yeah, we knew. We knew.
Yeah. The hair's out.
Her hair grew out.
Is that? Maybe you need to get struck by lightning, Tom. Maybe
that's it? That's all I got to do?
I loved it. Oh, this is great.
Some Russian cosmonaut spits out his vodka.
Something's going wrong in space.
In the new eye of the tornado.
Like Putin, we
have
a problem.
Go all the way to space?
He's still talking to Houston.
Yeah. No, I said Putin. Putin, we have a problem.
We have a problem.
Damn, that suit. All
children of the atom. Oh.
Children of the atom.
I mean, that's a big call.
He said the thing.
He said it.
Ooh. He's like, wait, I didn't do that.
Wait.
Heavens no.
Heavens to Betsy.
There's more skeletons than there were people in the
desk. Vision. He's having his own. Too soon.
Remember it. Where were you, Daddy?
What?
I mean.
Who? These are my kids making love?
The little stringy hair. The stringy hair on the skeleton is so
They
sad.
Were making love! Using all kinds of positions! Ooh. Missionary!
Wait, I'm seeing
missionary.
It now!
Missionary!
Bird missionary!
Welcome back to the After Show here in the Break Room. This time for X-Men 97, Episode 6, Life Death Part 2. Hit that graphic, baby. Incredible graphic work today. Class is now in session as we journey into space and find out aliens are a lot like us and not the good parts of us.
Oh, no. Not proud of that.
Hey, it kind of absolves us for a lot of our sins.
No,
right?
It doesn't, Brandon. No, it doesn't.
These are okay universal sins that we all have in the universe.
We didn't know that they were out there also saying it. We just also did it, and we knew it was wrong.
I blame the Celestials for creating us in there.
They probably invented that.
Yeah.
It's not
our fault. They made us evolve this way.
Yeah.
We're their experiment.
The original racist was Arishin.
It's true.
Yeah, this is true.
He called the Milky Way a ghetto first. That was him. Sorry, Evan. Already off to a bad start. And in this episode, Storm finally gets her powers back. We all knew it was coming. And just in time, because the X-Men, they're going to need some help. Whatever's left of the X-Men. I'm Brandon Barrick, and joining me today, you'll often find him dancing, drinking wine, and making love. It's Eric Voss.
Hi. Maybe the first two.
Make love.
We got a baby. Nothing's happening.
Damn.
Other things going
on. This is breaking news, folks. There's lots of ways to make love. Some consider doing the dishes an act of making love, right?
I mean, dancing is already a big step.
Yeah. Drinking wine! I never thought
making
I would hear
love. My children!
Say,
I was like, oh!
Love.
I would not, never that's thought I'd a... hear Professor X say, you said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
Professor X, that's not okay for you to say!
Yeah, no. Also on the show today, he once told Professor X that he can bark later. It's Tom Myers.
I did. I was like, darling, you can bark later.
Dude,
then he left me
kinky.
For Lalandra. That
was kinky.
That jerk. Yeah.
They act like I'm your pet. Maybe you are, Charles.
Yeah.
We understand the power dynamics. I mean, who's the real queen or king consort?
Maybe,
in that marriage?
Maybe the the Shi'ar Furries, you know? And maybe that's what he meant.
Oh,
she
like
meant
by literal
bark.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Well,
we'll
discuss everything that's going on with the Shi'ar. Forge using some magic. And, of course, the return of Mr. Citizen. But first, Eric, kick us off a little bit of a recap of what we saw in this episode.
You got it, Brandon. This episode gives us the stories of Charles Xavier and Storm interwoven as they try to balance their personal desires with their duties. The Shi'ar Empire are waging war against the Kree, and we open on Deathbird and the Imperial Guard, led by Gladiator, attacking Ronan the Accuser. But before Deathbird can kill him, she is stopped by an announcement that her sister, Lilandra, Empress of the Shi'ar, is getting married to Charles Xavier, who is back and walking.
Oh my gosh.
Looking a little like Magneto in that armor.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we kind of talked about it last week. potential like big villains, and like Onslaught being one of those. As soon as I saw like armor, I was like, ooh, it doesn't look like Onslaught's armor, but it just made me think of like Onslaught.
Of Xavier getting to that point.
Yeah.
Also on a personal level, when I saw him walking, I was like, are they gonna, as a fellow bald guy myself, are they gonna give him a haircut? Are they gonna give him a haircut?
I didn't know!
All this time, Tom!
It's because of my psychic powers, they're too powerful, okay. Right? But I was like, are they gonna give him a bird haircut? Like, where are we going with this?
Dude.
they could do anything they want.
I love that that hair is so stiff. It doesn't matter what helmet you smush it down with, it's popping back
into it. What came first in the Shi'ar Empire, the hair or the helmets?
Well,
because the helmets have to fit the hair.
Both are bulletproof.
Their hair is bulletproof?
I'm pretty
sure.
Why are
the helmets?
I'm pretty sure. Well, because the helmet's laser proof. So one's for bullets, next for laser.
Also, I'm kind of unimpressed by the Shi'ar that, like, Charles is walking, yes, but it's just a robot suit. That's not.
Oh yeah,
didn't like any other medical.
We could save him from death, but not help him walk any more than that.
The Wakandans have better medical technology than the Shi'ar.
Yeah,
and I think probably race is intertwined with that in some way that I can't figure out yet, but I will by the end of this episode. So the Shi'ar don't necessarily love this idea of Charles marrying Lilandra, believing that as a Terran, Charles is inferior to them, and they make that evident throughout this episode, especially Deathbird. But Deathbird invokes the right of Emdasha, the test of loyalty for a non-Shi'ar. And I love that this test is like, whatever I decide.
Yeah, I get to pick.
I get to pick. It's really, you know, dealer's choice.
Like, again, I was so afraid she was going to do some really messed up thing and be like, walk down the stairs without the suit. Who knows?
Could have been that.
I was like, it's an option before. Yeah, it could have been, you know, like a Ninja Warrior.
You must, line dance.
Yeah,
without line your dance, robot legs.
Exactly.
You must recite everything of a very modern Major General from the Pirates of Hindu.
Word perfect.
Yes. So her test, though, is to renounce Earth and all its empty promises, aka erase his memory of his life there. And what a stupid thing. Like, you know he's gonna have some kind of ideas, but that's how ignorant they are. It's also a ploy to get Lilandra to step down from the throne, of course. Mm-hmm. She thinks it'll never do this. So Xavier weighs this decision, not wanting to totally abandon the X-Men or Magneto, but he decides to commit to her. And Tom, what happens next?
Well, before we get into the rest of the Shi'ar Chandralar events, let's talk about Storm. Back in Texas, Forge's wound from the adversary is definitely infected and not looking good.
He needs
to get a Band-Aid on that or something. The demon taunts Storm and encourages her to let him die because of what he's done to her. Building the executioner weapon, building the collars on Genosha, all of
it. It's not a good look for
him. Not a good look.
He was just thinking of ideas.
He's like, look, I love you, but also here's these weapons I made that have hurt you and tormented you for years. As the adversary traps her in a claustrophobic vision, it reminds her about the time she told Jean about wanting to be human in the episode one of it. But Forge comes to her rescue using some eldritch-looking magic, which Forge calls desert magic, but we all know it was a little bit of Doctor Strange. You see those portals?
He had a book.
He had the ring spinning and all the other kind of visual.
The golden runes that just kind of detach and float. Like, you know, one of those runes was just like, this is like the memory of Ned Leeds, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you just detach it with this.
Yeah.
I was looking closely. I was like, is there like a sling ring on there? Because maybe he's pulling her to another dimension, because he banished her to the desert, as we see. Uh-huh. In any case.
Yeah, is the adversary not dead, or it just banished it back to... Well, it banished it to the desert, then it came back.
Because they had to go to the desert.
Storm killed it, maybe? It dies in the...
Yeah, by believing in herself.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Belief?
No, it's more complicated than that.
Nope, we watched the same episode, Eric. No, I saw that. The two set off for Snow Snake Tower, a war fort that may contain the Midnight Shala, a cacti that only grows in a cave and it can heal his wounds. Well, when they arrive, Storm must face one of her biggest fears, claustrophobia, and climb through that very narrow mineshaft. Ugh, I had goosebumps at that part.
Forge buried the lead on that one.
Yeah, kind of should
have. I didn't tell you about this part.
Yeah, knowing that was one of her biggest fears, he probably should have let her know about that. She once again faces the adversary, and what do you guys think? Was it its real form? Was this more of Storm's vision about it? Because we think that Forge, like, destroyed or banished him in some way using that special
spell book, right?
Yeah, but he's also not great at magic, right? Like, true. He's like, I learned this from my mom.
Yeah, my mom had some magic.
We saw the spell falling apart too. At the end.
Yeah, it was a real, like, revelatory moment where Storm's like, it must be in that book, right? And he's like, I haven't read. I went to camp this summer. I didn't have time to do the summer reading. He doesn't feel confident in it. So I think they just want us to think of Forge as more of a technologist and not as, a wizard. But that is part of his DNA. That
because in the comics, he was trained to fight the adversary. Right. Mm-hmm. Through magic and stuff, it does do that.
And for a split second, I thought, I was like, wait, are they saying Forge can build anything because of his mutant power and magic is what, you know, is like the 1% thing that...
Yeah.
I was like, is that what they're saying? Because that would be interesting. I hadn't thought of it like that.
That's how I interpreted it back in episode 4. It seemed like they want to imply that having this kind of cosmic power connection to the adversary is what gave him the edge to invent this like impossible future technology that's going to be part of the cure for the techno-organic virus in the future for Cable. But yeah, I think this was the adversary because it seems like this episode is just kind of closing the book on the adversary. Yeah. I'd be surprised if they made room for it in future episodes. I think this is as real to it's just... I think the decision, we can talk about this more later in the episode, I think the decision to link the adversary so much to Storm was just... odd to me. There's so many other things that I find interesting about Storm, and that she had this connection to the astral plane in the episode of the
with the Shadow King.
Like, why not bring the Shadow King into play with her? But I find the adversary, I mean, anything bird themed I find to be interesting. But even like the writers of this episode are like, so a big owl, like they're kind of making fun of and belittling the adversary. I don't know. I like the adversary as it links to Forge, but not to Storm.
A lot of bird villains this episode.
Birds are our villains, folks.
Yeah.
That's the dinosaurs turned into birds.
Bird flu.
They're here. They got that. They invented bird flu. They're dangerous.
No, hold on. They're our feathered friends, and if we just look to them as protectors, they could be on our
Every
side.
Every time we look up, they shit in our eyes.
They're trying to connect to us and tell us, I'm still here. Talk to me sometimes. I do.
And they're going, and that's why you're outside talking. Okay, it makes sense now.
They're giving you the cure to cancer, Tom, if you were to just
if you just understand their coos.
It's not worth it if it's from them.
I don't want no bird cures.
I don't want no bird cures.
Talking like a She-Hulk.
Us simians will figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, luckily for us and for Storm, she's able to overcome her fear by realizing that she was part of the reason why she was being held back. It wasn't just the executioner's weapon. So now she feels the storm again. She calls the lightning down and her powers resurface. She gets this new haircut and a new suit.
And she's got long hair. She's got a crown.
All of the old animated show by Lightning just making a suit.
Right.
Pretty badass.
Love it.
So now
she checked it out in the water. She was like, this was great.
She did. Made some tornadoes and Storm is back, baby.
We had another...
kind of like a Peter Pan flight hook moment where he's just looking at the water.
That's right.
The running with the horses always gives me spirits, Stallion of the Cimarron.
If I was that horse, I'd be so scared right now. Oh my God!
I'm
getting spooked as part of what I do.
I don't care about birds,
but be nice to those horses, Dave.
Horses are dangerous.
Yeah.
Birds first, then horses.
Yeah, then horses.
I'll take this bird's land. One more time, I'm leaving. I'm walking off this set.
So she brings her lightning powers and the cactus back to Forge, where she helps heal them. But before they can revel in their happiness, she sees the news about Genosha and the massacre.
Tough stuff. I mean, my guy, you gotta give it up for Forge, who was like, oh, well, now that's all fixed. Let's run away, baby.
Yeah, he and Xavier were both like, the minute they got alone with their loved ones, like, so we're bouncing,
we're good, right?
We're having a honeymoon.
He's got a spot on Aruba, and he's waiting to take someone
there.
I got a timeshare. Yeah, exactly. I'm roped into it, babe.
It just so happens, you know, I can get there right now. Let's go.
Yeah. Look, you're fine. Yes, I invented the gun that took away your powers, but they're back, baby.
And I made so much money from this defense contract.
We all learned. Well, back on Chandelar, Deathbird takes advantage of Xavier's hesitation to attack Lilandra and the others. What can Charles do but use his greatest weapon of his own? His mind. The power of the mind. He brings the Shi'ar into a classroom to lay down the hard truth. The Shi'ar get their power from stalling the growth of younger cultures, and they are, as Xavier puts it, a snake oil racket!
Wow.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dang, dude, taking them to school in the astral plane.
Literally.
<That's> right.
As he explains that coexistence is messy, he sees a vision. Skeletons in the classroom, and a tall gambit turning into a skeleton, seemingly seeing the Genosha massacre and passing out, not before he's like, fuck you guys, I'm out of here. He's like, in coexistence is beautiful, we love each other. What the fuck is going on?
My kids are supposed to be
making love. I'm gonna go kill every human I can get my hands on.
Oh, God.
It was just, he did the opposite of what President Bush did when he was reading My Pet Goat and heard about 9/11.
He stopped reading the book.
He put the book down and said, pants, the world's on fire! Run for your lives! Any relatives you have in New York are dead! They're dead!
Oh,
the Landry's been fun. Here's your dog collar back. We're done, baby. I gotta go to Earth.
Woof.
Forget this shit. I don't want to be your king consort. This is bullshit. I gotta go to Earth and kick some ass.
Let me keep this armor first, and whilst I can walk over
can
there,
I please
real quick.
Keep the legs.
Can
I please keep the legs?
But then otherwise, fuck off.
So yeah, Charles is coming back to Earth. He decides it's time to come back, regardless of the consequences to his and Alondra's relationship. Listen, a good partner will let you go back to your home planet. Fix things and then come back.
If you love them, let them go.
If you love them, let them go. Like a bird.
Thank you. Thank you.
And at the end of the episode on Earth, we see a very scaredy boy Bolivar Trask running away from Mr. Sinister, revealing that Bolivar gave his DNA to Sinister so that Sinister could access the master mold. He seemingly feels guilty for the massacre on Genosha. Bolivar does.
Yeah.
Little too late.
Yeah.
Sinister says that it's the beginning of a prologue, and clearly he has a larger plan. What the hell is going on, baby?
Oh, man. I want to know what the conversation was before this. Like, as Bolivar Trask is running on foot down a street, like
down a cul-de-sac.
It kind of feels like the beginning of It Follows. Like, you're just going to escape this guy on foot. He can come out of any fucking shadow.
I imagine, Bolivar was like going down to the local Walgreens or Rite Aid or something, and out of the shadows was like, ooh, thanks for the DNA. And it's like, guy again.
It's what you get for going to get some vanilla Coke from nearby CVS.
Before we get into like all of our big questions from this episode, what are some of your favorite moments? This was maybe our, I don't want to say slow. Slow is the wrong word. But maybe our least action-packed episode of X-Men.
What? Dude, there was a big space Navy flight
opening with the Imperial Guard. We got tons of cameos from like these bench characters.
Yeah,
from
I was going to say filler, but even filler is like...
Filler's the wrong word.
It's the wrong word, too. I mean, it's like this episode is like the least sexy person on Temptation Island. I still would. There's no, like,
damn,
it's fine.
Dude, damn,
it's
dude.
Fine. And there's been no filler so far. But yes, like after last week's where it was like, where I needed to lay in bed for like 3 days straight.
Yeah, that was devastating.
And run out of tears. Yeah, this has been a little bit of a nice breather, maybe. Yeah. A nice breather.
It's not unpacking what happened in Genosha.
Yeah,
not until the end of the episode do we start to get some answers on that. We just go straight to space, which you can see as part of the design. Well, I think the structural choice to divide the life-death and to call this episode Life-Death Part 2, it's just like a weird choice. I just have a lot of, I'm not vibing with the Storm storyline.
I thought that they called it Life-Death because they were maybe going to talk about Genosha and that was going to be part
right.
of the death
and
the life of Storm coming back, but no, I guess.
Yeah, it was very much like a Charles Lalandre episode, and I really did like all this. I love the classroom and astral plane scene, using the chalk to kind of demonstrate. Obviously, that applies to the Shi'ar, but it also implies to imperialism as a concept on Earth, and I just thought that was awesome, just to show like, well, we don't have to colonize and conquer, we can just allow countries to evolve the way that they are, and then maybe we'll have other partners who can help us fix this broken world.
Right.
Like, why do we have to impose our will and our ideology everywhere? And I just thought Charles explaining that, it's just like we were all in the classroom, and it's like, that's just such a great moment.
Yeah.
But these X-Men 97 writers are so clever, because it's just like an Earthling lecturing extraterrestrials who are supposed to be more advanced than him, but like they do it in this clever way to where like people who might be more ignorant or not open to those ideas might be like, yeah, those stupid fucking aliens do need a lesson. But like maybe someone else in the room watching it with them might be like, you know what, we do that here.
We use
sounds
our
familiar.
Their one religious piece of art that they have they're reading it the wrong way, right?
Yeah.
And it's like it takes a guy from the outside to be like, you do realize that like this is not a good metaphor for what you think you're doing out there.
Right.
I also love the one leader of the Shi'ar, the council member, being like, we can't change everything because our people will be confused.
they won't be able to understand. It's
we
like,
got to keep being...
Flying through space.
Yeah,
exactly.
Listen, we only do this because our people would get so confused.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't understand. They don't understand coexistence. So we have to be like this.
Well, maybe I could explain to them. No, we'd have to build these schools and have teachers explain them how civics work.
Yeah, well, that's what when we he was in the Earth astral plane, he's like, what is this? What is this dust? What's that board? Why are you teaching me something? Yeah. Like, what is happening?
Yeah. I'm just impressed that Charles is like, I haven't talked to the X-Men. It's fine.
You know, well, that was one thing that was so confusing.
He could have sent a message to be like, hey, just so you guys know, I'm walking.
Yeah, in the finale, I'm walking here, just so you know. In the finale of the old X-Men series, it was very obvious that Xavier was going to die, but then Lalandra can save him. So I was surprised that in this series, it was very much like, he's dead, here's his will, Xavier's dead. I was like, I thought he's just alive in space. So when it came back around here, I was like, oh yeah, we're like five eps in or four eps in, and we're already where I knew we were going to end up. That part was a little bit confusing. So now we're back to that question, which is, why did you not say anything to anybody at any point, you know?
Yeah, we still have questions as to why the X-Men just assume he's dead, so much so that internally they imposed his last will and testament, allowed Magneto to take over
And get him a death certificate. All of that.
It seems like there is kind of like a noble lie, right? Like, let people believe that he's dead and that might heal the planet. But the opposite happened, right? Like, Magneto imposed his kind of like weird self-exile and self-segregation of putting the mutants on their own island rather than like engage in the messy, complicated integration process and try to fix things in the communities where the bigots are. So the Earth obviously needed Charles Xavier and Magneto, you know, and the fact that it just had Magneto, that experiment failed. So it's weird that Charles wouldn't see that, and after he got cured, just continued to live in kind of like bliss with Lalandra and these weird bigots, and he wouldn't have sensed their bigotry before this. Like, he's been gone for 6 months?
He's been running around a track.
That was going to be my question. Yeah, that was going to be my question, because she says, like, you know, last year, right? Or the past year. She made it sound like it's been about a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my question, is how long has it been? So it's been a year since he left, but then it seemed like it was a lot sooner on Earth.
Well,
like, it seemed like it had been months.
Madeline was able to have...
Yeah.
That's true. And I think that's part of why the X-Men have been like, he's dead. You know, I think in their minds, maybe like month one, they're like, he'll be back.
Exactly.
But at this point, they're like, we have to move on.
You know,
and they can't tell the public can't be like, well, why is there no death certificate for this guy? You know, like, they have to go through the motions to keep things moving. But I think in their minds, they're like, we got to write him out because, like, he's not here.
Yeah. Can I say, I love the line where Lalandra's like, calling one's family is like a black hole. We're sucked into their drama. And I'm like, man, these are some writers who left their hometowns to go to LA and just don't hate calling their family back in Georgia or wherever it is. And suddenly now they're mixed in with the drama of one sibling yelling at another sibling or one parent being like, what? I just thought that they would want this piece of jewelry. And the other sister being like, I wanted that brooch. Why did you give it to her?
Are you still making your little cartoons?
When are you going to be on the TV?
Yeah.
You know, Rebecca's son is a doctor.
And that's why I don't come back for Thanksgiving, Mom. Yeah,
that's exactly.
I think his 6-year-old son watches your show. You know, Jackie from across the street, she's divorced now. Maybe something.
Are you things on the Netflix? Oh, we don't get Netflix.
We don't have Netflix.
We don't get the YouTube. I don't know.
Do you work on Young Sheldon? Do you know anyone on Young Sheldon?
Do you know Sheldon?
Can you bring back Blue Bloods, please?
Why did they cancel Last Man Standing? Why did you cancel Last Man Standing?
Can you write on Yellowstone? That's
Is
a
there
good
another
one.
Public service in Chicago that we could have a show about, please? Chicago Library, maybe? And then every episode someone gets sick in the library and they have to call the Chicago Fire people and the Chicago Med people come too.
Why won't they let those January 6th protesters out of
there? Hostages!
Did you imprison them over there?
I watched episode 2 of that X-Men and I didn't agree with what was going on. Why? They should have stormed that place.
Hey! We want to remind you to check out nerdriot.shop, where you can always find the latest and greatest gear from new rock stars. We've got a ton of X-Men-inspired merch designs right now. Check out some of these awesome designs. We're wearing some of them. Producer Evan's wearing some of them right now. You can get it as a hoodie. Get it as a shirt. Those are the two options.
There's also a crop top. Tie it around your waist.
There's crop tops.
Yeah,
I really led into that with more.
There was.
There's coffee mugs also. There's tons of great designs. There's also tons of fandoms that we get inspired by. Some of our favorite merch is on there. So check it out, nerdriot.shop. All right, let's get into our first question about the episode. Evan, you have something?
The other day something kind of weird happened in the studio after we finished filming.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I recorded some of it on camera. I actually put it together if you guys want to check it out.
During the show, right now?
Yeah, I think it's important. It's okay. You know, I want to get a couple different opinions on
okay. it. Okay, let's check it out.
Yeah, sure.
The audience only knew how many jelly beans ended up underneath the table. Ugh. One for the trash. One for me.
No, Evan, those aren't.
One for the trash. One for me. One for the trash. What's this? Break Room merch launch 1997. God, how am I gonna watch this? It's so old.
Damn, Evan, go it's for like that a, Emmy or what? It's damn. Like a ring.
Or rings. Oh.
Hey! Zach Huddleston Sr. here. I'm thrilled to be a part of the Break Room, Ottawa's number one afternoon public access. And that's all because of you. As a special treat for you, we're releasing a brand new line of Break Room merch. Yeah, we got stuff like graphic tees, baseball caps, the bucket hats, and even warm, cozy hoodies for the trash bags out there. You don't need to hear that from me. Why don't we ask Trashy the Trash Bag, the Break Room mascot, what he thinks of the merch?
Hey kids, it's me, Trashy the Trash Bag, and I'm here to tell you that I love this merch so much, I want to murder the box it's currently in so the merch can be in me instead.
Well, Trashy, we're actually gonna hide this box somewhere in the studio, and the fans at home can guess where it is to win the entire box.
Trashy, say what?
That's right. If you call the 1-800 number that's on the screen right now, 1-800-TRASH-BAGS-FOR-LIFE and ever, or log on to our GeoCities portal, you can enter with your guess of where we've hidden this in the studio.
I tell you, what a lucky box that is to have such soft tees inside of it. I would love to be inserted full to the brim with merch, overflowing. Right now, most of my trash is jagged edges from cans that people do not want to recycle. And if I could have a garment dyed tee inside of me instead, I could dye a happy bag.
Again, this offer is only good to the end of August 1997. If you get in, you'll get everything in this box. And again, thank you so much for making the show such a success this year. We plan on keeping on trucking all the way through 1998, 1999, and then stopping January 1st, 2000, because the world will be over. Thank you so much for watching the show and for playing along. Later, skaters.
And cut. Great job, guys. I think we got it.
Great. Yeah. Great. Nice. Christy, what are you getting into there?
A friend of mine's older brother told me that if you eat Coke and Pop Rocks at the same time, it makes you strong.
No, that's not what Coke and Pop Rocks
do. Oh, my
no.
God!
Trashy, what's happening, Trashy?
Everybody get out of the studio! Something's happening to my body!
Evan, cover the monitor!
Cover the
that's
monitor.
That's how Zach Sr.
Not
died.
The cameras?
Oh, man.
Zach Sr. looks a lot like Zach. I wonder where that merch ended up, though. We have merch. We have merch. We have merch!
Nice.
Beautiful.
Evan. Amazing. Yeah, so that weird thing just happened.
Yeah, that just happened.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, thanks for getting it on camera.
Yeah, I'm glad
with multiple setups.
Yeah. Yeah, and now yeah, I guess we have some merch now. So check out nerdriot.shop for all the Break Room merch. We've got all these comfort tees that are really comfortable and they're a little bit higher quality. So check it out over at nerdriot.shop.
Did we tell Zach we finally figured out how his dad died?
Yeah, I think I don't want to break the news to him.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. If you're watching now, please don't tag Zach.
Don't let him know we saw it.
Well, check out, sounds like we're gonna have some Break Room merch. So check out nerdriot.shop. Is it there now?
Yeah.
You are quick. You are quick, Evan.
Wow.
there wasn't a ton in that box. So.
order it's kind now. Of one of those, like, you know, the magician.
Oh, it's like a Mary Poppins
box. You just
box.
Keep pulling. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love nice. Mary Poppins' this box. Cut that out, please. Thank you. I mean, I do. Let's talk about the end of the episode. Mr. Sinister kind of revealing himself as being behind this attack on Genosha. What do we think his master plan is here? Why would he want to kill all these mutants? Especially if he's not going to be on the island, like, scooping up blood for his little DNA project.
Yeah.
Like, what's his end game here with activating the master mold to then create this wild sentinel to then destroy, kill so many mutants?
I feel like the way this makes the most sense is if Sinister is in league with other people.
Right.
And that the exact step of using Master Mold to 3D print this Wild Sentinel Kaiju is not necessarily what Mr. Sinister did, but part of, like, a deal he made, an alliance he made with other forces so that he can get something else from this deal. Mm. And that thing is mutants, like specific mutants that he can experiment on. Because it doesn't make sense for Mr. Sinister to want to massacre hundreds of thousands, if not millions of mutants on Genosha. His thing is like harvesting, kidnapping, and experimenting on to
building chimeras is like his main goal, right? He's always wanted to build a chimera whenever he can.
Yeah,
like, he's put a couple mutants together,
smush them together, tie them together, and then you have a pigeon rat. But he doesn't have this goal of wanting to just wipe them out. I feel like that's something Apocalypse would want. That's something Bastion
would
want.
Gonna say,
and we know from the opening credits that they keep teasing Bastion.
Yeah.
They keep teasing Apocalypse.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not just Mr. Sinister. Like, this episode ended that way, and if it is just Mr. Sinister in the next four episodes, I'm gonna be a little disappointed, because it just, I mean, maybe they'll write it in a way that makes sense, but then why give us all these like Bastion clues with Nimrod in the opening title sequence?
Nimrod, and they showed, we'll talk about this a little bit more, but they've showed like Phoenix
the last like, you know, four episodes,
either,
or whatever.
She's either in the opening credits or like mentioned in the show.
Mentioned in the episode,
And this does seem like a weird move from Sinister, where it's like, is this part of Nathaniel Summers, or was it like Nathaniel Summers, Madeline was like a long con that happened to work, but he was like, oh shit, I'm also doing the thing, the master mold thing right now. Well, I got the baby and I dunked the baby. Well, I took the baby and they sent him to the future. Well, I'll go back to the master mold, I guess. Like, which plan was in place first? Do they work together? Which I guess maybe they work together if it's a thing with Apocalypse and it involves the future.
Well, I took it more of like maybe that was his own thing that he's interested in, he's trying to do in terms of the Madeline Pryor, Nathaniel Summers stuff. But yeah, no, I agree with you, Eric. I think that he's got to be working for somebody. And I was thinking Apocalypse too. Granted, they're having all these clues about, you know, Bastion coming out, but I was thinking, if without any of that, I was like, it's probably Apocalypse, because they keep teasing him, number one, and number two, he's all about survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple Omega-level mutants on that island. I mean, we saw Exodus dancing on the fountain. Magneto was there. And so, you know, this could be Apocalypse's way of just trying to wipe everybody out and create his new world that he wanted. But yeah, it seems a little bit too much of a power move for just Sinister. It's like way too much.
I think, though, the way, this is just one take on how their plans could be aligned, is like, imagine at some point in the future, or wherever he is in time, in the axis of time, Apocalypse is like, there is a vision for the future of mutant kind, but in order to build it, we have to wipe out. There has to be an ice age that wipes out the current
like
generation.
A fire that
mutants.
Burns out the field.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And in order to raise that, I'm going to be using Master Mold. I'm going to be using Bastion, involving Nimrod, merging with Master Mold tech. Bolivar Trask is going to be involved in erecting the Master Mold. And that Sinister is going to help me in the future. Using Cable is going to breed like the perfect new strain of mutant kind. So in order to do this, we're going to send Nathan Summers into the future using this techno-organic virus. We're going to cure him, and that Cable is going to be like the new generation of mutant kind, and Mr. Sinister is going to help make sure that the gene pool is pure and is horrible way. But in order to do that, the current biodiversity of mutant kind in the present day of 1997 needs to be wiped out. So it's like these guys all kind of working together, Apocalypse wanting to build a new vision of the future in which mutants are in charge, is working in league with Bastion and with Sinister in order to enact that plan, and that Cable is really at the heart of it. That's just one theory for how they could all be connected.
And one thing interesting too I was looking at is like, well, you know, Bastion is like a cyborg humanoid, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of like a human sentinel in a sense. And who's the geneticist on the show? Sinister. So maybe they're going to incorporate, you know, Sinister is the one who helped even make a Bastion in the first place or something. I don't know. I feel like, because, you know, the show, as we know, is not afraid to, you know, to tackle the lore in their own way and come up with their own version of events. So I was like, oh, maybe they're going to go that route if they're hinting and teasing at Bastion. We have the most evil geneticist who could even create a human sentinel, right?
It does feel like this show wants to, you know, they're pulling from the whole history of like X-Men, the animated series. They've made so many references to that, pulling a lot of stuff from the comics. 80s
and from the new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And like every episode they find ways to put in like fun little cameos just to be like, hey, we're really filling out this universe.
Yeah.
With this three-part finale they seem to be building towards, it does feel like that, yeah, there could be multiple villains here kind of working together. Mm-hmm. And if this is a timeline they're exploring where it's like, yeah, we can make this timeline get very dark and like very strange because it's separate from MCU, like 616. I don't know if this they consider this, we had this conversation in the office the other day, like the 616 is involves many timelines, right? Mm. Sophie that we know... Mm. Or not so, I'm sorry, Sylvie that we know, she's in a different timeline than our Loki, right? But she's still in a 616 universe because it's all within the 616. So if this is like a weird timeline within the 616, where they're like over the at least three seasons we know we have with the show, we're going to take this to a weird place.
Yeah.
Where like, what if like this keeps playing out and it starts building to that future we've seen so many times in the X-Men universe that's one of like... mass extinction and you know, a kind of like dictatorship, post-apocalyptic, all that stuff. We're going to like build to that for a while and get these mutants to that place. And then the end of this show will be some sort of like resetting of that timeline in full. So it could be a long time before we see Gambit again in some form alive.
We've come into the classic question in the multiverse saga of what's the difference between a timeline and a universe. And if you were to ask different showrunners and different Marvel executives to give you different answers, they know.
Right.
But just based off of what we have been able to derive from different titles, it seems like anytime you see a ring, whether that's a sacred timeline ring, or when in Quantumania, Kang showed two different rings in Nathaniel Richards' speech, or the He Who Remains speech at the end of Loki, he showed like, I was aware of different universes other than mine. And there was one ring, and then it widened out to three different rings that was orbiting around him. I think each ring represents a different universe. So that is like a sacred timeline. But the reason Sylvie was in a different timeline is if that branch timeline were left unperturbed, it would evolve into its own ring and its own universe. So I think it's okay to consider timelines and universes as synonymous. But in the context of the Loki series, whenever they're talking about branch timelines, it's a timeline that has not gotten to the point of evolving into its own distinct universe. Mm. So they prune it as if it's like, I basically think that they're saying that the sacred timeline is like a fern or a vine of some kind, that if you were to prune that devil's vine, it doesn't grow into its own plant. But at some point, that devil's vine can turn into its own plant, that if you clip it off of its source plant, it can live on its own. Mm. I'm sorry that I veered us into this. But
I veered us into it.
Yeah.
No, I forget, you know, I that was very helpful. I forget that that's,
it is
that's even what they make us ask about these shows.
Yeah. But I think X-Men 97 could have a completely different approach to it because the way they haven't really looked at multiverse the way the MCU multiverse saga has, but they have done a lot with time travel and timelines and branch timelines.
Yeah.
So those branch timelines, I think, will evolve into their own universe. I don't think that there is like a different numerical designation yet for like, for example, in the One Man's Worth universe where you have Wolverine and Storm who are married.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of its own timeline.
That was the Nimrod episode, right?
Yeah.
We saw them fade away. Like when the past, in the X-Men animated series, it's a lot of like Cable or Bishop going back in time, fixing something, and that changes the future.
Right.
But then like from the perspective of the past that they go to, nothing ever changes.
Right.
It's like, oh, we killed this guy. Don't worry. It helps in the future. But they just keep living on. Like,
right. It's like before fiction really started to explore the idea of time travel equals multiverse.
Yeah.
That was like, that wasn't popular until like later on where that was like the common understanding. And in fact, Avengers Endgame made a lot of people think that this is like now a multiverse. Like that's the way we approach it. Commonly, time travel is understood to be something more like Back to the Future. You go back in time and then the current timeline you're on warps and changes back. And there might be a temporary branch timeline, but then at some point by the end of the episode, episode of the movie, it's going to get erased and then things are going to go back to normal. Yeah, so I think in general, the main events of the X-Men 97 series are set in their own universe that probably will have its own designation numerically at some point. But as things get altered or shifted, I don't know if we're going to get... Yeah, it could just be something, 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 97.
Yeah.
But I don't think as things get branched and forked, I don't think those are going... I think they're going to just get clipped.
We talked about this before the show too, but it's interesting how they're already, you know, trying to get some synergy with the rest of the MCU, like with Ronan's hammer being the same in this, even though it's a different character. You know, they had, who was the other cameo they had from the MCU? They also called Earthlings Terrans, like they do in Guardians of the Galaxy.
They're using
so
Terran.
It's interesting seeing that, you know, they have their own, maybe they're creating their own universe here, but at least somebody, maybe Kevin Feige, is like, let's tie in some of these things.
I mean, having the Watcher
visually.
There.
Oh, the Watcher? Yeah, that
too. The Watcher just is such a huge link. I mean, I know the Watcher seems like an animated thing, but no one watched I Am Groot season 2, it seems like. But the Watcher shows up in I Am Groot season 2. While it's an animated property, they use the VFX design of Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which is a live-action title. So it's implied that the events that we see of I Am Groot season 2, it is a...
We were told it was canon, right?
In that way, and it is canonical. Yeah. So the fact that the Watcher shows up in the final episode of I Am Groot Season 2 means that we have had a live-action Jeffrey Wright Uatu the Watcher cameo in the live-action MCU, and then add that to the fact that we saw other Watchers talking to Stan Lee in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a matter of time, maybe the Fantastic Four film, that we're going to see Jeffrey Wright in a live-action form as the huge Uatu head. Yeah, we've talked a lot about this. We should probably move on to our next question. Because you were hinting at this with talking about Phoenix.
Right.
Why did Xavier get that vision of the skeletons in the classroom, the giant Gambit skeleton?
We don't know if, like, I don't know if it's, like, the events of that were happening concurrently with stuff on Earth. We don't know that. If this is after, you know, why is, when he's in the astral plane, that he is controlling everything, he gets, boom, hit with a vision, right?
Just like Gene and Madeline got hit with a vision.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, that was accompanied with, like, the red eyes. That felt like Sinister or something else. Maybe not even Sinister. Something was, like, forcing those visions. And I'm wondering if that same force is working here. Because it does seem like it was similar to, like, Madeline's vision of, like, the master mold with, like, a skull face. Again, we get, like, the skeleton
and
imagery.
The graves and,
Yeah, so, like, to me, is that, like, the Phoenix force, right? Is that... I'm trying to think what's cosmically powerful enough to hit Charles like that. And it's not... Madeline's vision I can see from Sinister because it's a creation of Sinister. Mm-hmm. But for Charles to be able to be hit like this, I feel like it's got to be something very powerful. Either the Phoenix Force, Cassandra Nova... If they are doing Onslaught, Onslaught is like powerful enough to like Onslaught in the comics like pulls Jean Grey into the astral plane without her knowledge at all, just like does it. So like it could be something like that where if Onslaught is trying to get Charles back to Earth so he can have Charles and Eric together so they can attack them both. I don't know. Like,
I would love
it
to
seems
see
like a sinister fort. Sinister. It seems like a sinister force at work here, giving Charles this vision at this moment. Not just like Obi-Wan Kenobi feeling everyone die on Alderaan, which it could be that also just the wave of destruction hit him as it spread out from Earth.
I would love to see something new in terms of like new for us in this show, like Onslaught or Cassandra Nova, or something like that, where we're moving the show forward and not being slaves to the old material. But I couldn't help but remember that and I think it was the finale of season 4 of the old show. Apocalypse's plan was to link all the psychics, the most powerful psychics in the world, to control time and create his own utopia. And so again, getting back to who's a villain and maybe who Sinister working for, Apocalypse has abilities to tap into psychics.
Yeah.
Maybe he's doing that and he's behind all of that. And I also can't help but to get back to last week's episode, which crushed me, and I'll never recover from. Gambit, maybe instead of Cable, undoing everything, which I'd be okay with this time, this is a way to get Gambit become, death for one of the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which he was in the comics. Maybe this is a way Sinister and Apocalypse can bring him back. That way you can say, oh, look, he did die. We didn't just magic wand time slide fix this from Cable. Which again, writers, I'm okay with. If you want to do that, no problem. I'll be fine with this, with totally retconning that. I think that would be one way to tie it in, but it would be a little bit, it wouldn't be as exciting as something new.
For us, I would love to see something new.
Yeah, I would too. I was just thinking about where we are in the show and what things have happened, and all those things are, you know, historical canon for this show. So yeah. Where could we end up? You know?
I mean, I went into the season thinking Cassandra Nova was going to be part of the finale, and like she was going to be my Mephisto theory for the season. And the more we've heard from Jake Castorena, he's just basically said, "Hey, don't let go of Cassandra."
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because I like it when showrunners take responsibility in doing expectation management, and they don't want fans to feel disappointed. And Cassandra Nova is going to be the villain of Deadpool and Wolverine. We don't need to see her on this show, but everything else about this attack on Genosha has Cassandra Nova's fingerprints
right. mm-hmm.
on it. It's her plan, but they're giving it to someone else. So I like this. I like what you brought up about Apocalypse, the idea that he could link all the psychics. But the fact that Charles Xavier got this vision of Gambit as a skeleton, ultimately, it's a value good thing that he is now distracted from his marriage.
Snapped him out of it.
Yeah. Snapped him out of it, and he's going back to Earth. That is a force of good that gave him this vision,
yeah.
despite the fact that it used skeletons, scary, scary skeletons. It is scaring him back straight to come back home and focus on his home problems. So that's why I like this idea of the Phoenix Force reaching out through space, and the Phoenix Force now being seen as a more of a neutral force, or at least a force for good when it comes to the X-Men's existence mm-hmm. right now, that she wants to preserve Jean Grey and Madeline Pryor, and that means fixing everything on Earth right now and getting Scott or getting Charles Xavier back home. So I like this idea of the Phoenix reaching out. I mean, the Phoenix has experience with the Shi'ar.
Mm-hmm.
That's what brought them into the X-Men animated series. And it's a familiar thing that we saw in episode 3. And the Phoenix Force, the fact that the Phoenix uses these metaphoric visions, I think also tells us something.
Right.
That yeah. she used clues of rats. She used mm-hmm. things like headstones. Like the Phoenix Force used these different kind of like these images that have symbolic meaning to the person who's receiving the visions. And I think that tells us something. It's not someone giving him literal visions of what's happening
right.
back on Earth. They're being cryptic about it. So that's why I would think just the Phoenix Force, because that's just how the Phoenix Force has operated
yeah.
so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I like that. As opposed to like, yeah, Gambit is a skeleton because he's death. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
No,
I like yeah. that theory. And I want Gambit to come
sure,
back
sure,
and to be
yeah.
one of the four horsemen. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Have him come back as a skeleton. I like skeleton Gambit.
Yeah. yeah. Very Ghost Rider-y.
Like he could just like throw his ribs at people. Like
his wrist can just spin.
Yeah,
spin.
I don't charge on my ribs.
Limited ammo, though.
yeah.
This one's for you, Eve. Get it? So they did split up the life death into two parts. We talked about that, which I think was a good move because I think if that had all been one episode, it would have felt too rushed, right? Her
yeah.
meeting Forge, meeting the adversary, having these visions, and then getting her powers back, right? I don't know if taking two 15-minute chunks spread across
but, you know, then again,
two episodes with an episode in the middle was good.
You know, I mean, they were able to take care of the Madeline Pryor, the Inferno story in one episode, which, you know,
right.
again, maybe we want more, maybe we could have had more. But I think that was an even harder story to tackle, in my opinion. But
yeah.
So maybe they split it up because they wanted, for us, like, watching it, to have a lot of time between Storm getting... You know, her losing her powers
yeah.
to earning it back, so it felt earned, maybe. Which
and we don't
back.
Want a bunch of. We don't want a whole episode of just Storm being sad and being like, I
but,
can't feel the breeze. I can't.
As we're talking about it, I kind of do want that just to be one fucking awesome episode. Because if you weren't,
yeah.
you're right. Splitting up into two is not enough. But if you split it up into three and you put it in the background, like the
yeah.
Savage Land arc that was in the background
right.
of every episode of season two. Then you run into the issue of like, oh, you want to do a Storm storyline, but you didn't have the courage to just title
right.
an episode.
You won't give her.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to put her on the back burner of every episode. So I understand not wanting to do that. But it's just like, I think if we merge the two halves of the life-death storyline that we saw into one episode, it does feel unsatisfying. And that's why I feel like you needed the Shadow King.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You needed someone who Storm had a relationship with in the past rather than just using Forge's cosmic entity.
Yeah. And Forge is like, sorry, the adversary got it.
Yeah, it just feels like the fact that it was a bird, something that can fly,
yeah.
it kind of feels like they thematically try to connect it. And I think the reason it just feels unearned is it just felt like Storm is on someone else's path
right.
to regain her powers
right.
rather than on her own path.
Right.
And you kind of, and that's, it just felt odd that like Forge is her conduit to regain her powers rather than, and then like Forge has to show her this claustrophobic space, and it just felt like we forced Storm through these story beats to, and it didn't feel organic that she regained her powers.
Right.
It just felt like, well, Storm needs to regain her powers, and we're gonna do our best to tell the storyline through the adversary, but if you just brought her into the astral plane with the Shadow King. Like, maybe I'm just like thinking in the Animorphs, where you have the Elemist and the Sidorak are both two different feuding cosmic forces that are using the Animorphs and using another team. I think it's not the Sidorak. God damn it, Sidorak.
Again, help you on Animorphs.
Animorphs stands in the chat, yeah, going wild. Let us know. Angry. I can hear the angry comments now.
There is a an antagonistic cosmic entity against the godly Elemist in the Animorphs universe, and they both put together superhero teams and transport them to kind of this interstellar battlefield, and they have to fight it out. It's one of the coolest arcs in the Animorphs books. And I think that's what you need. You need the Shadow King and the adversary going at each other.
Yeah.
And then they kind of duel it out, and then Storm is kind of like torn from each side. And like they are each promising her different things. And then she says, fuck both y'all. I'm going to go my own route. And I think that's what we needed here. It was just this awkward conversation with the adversary, and it just felt like it would just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and I agree. It felt like it wasn't earned, because like, you know, even Forge coming through with the cool Doctor Strange magic and just ripping him away, you know, Forge solved that problem. Like, she didn't, granted, the adversary came back later, she had to tackle
it. In the end.
Yeah, but this whole time she's been kind of, you know, like, piggybacking on what almost feels like Forge's story.
I do like that the adversary is voiced by the same voice actor, Storm. And it is a manifestation of Storm's own self-doubt.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea that, you know, she's gone through this tragedy. She is like wallowing in pain and like, you know, self-doubt and like all that stuff. And it has drawn this entity because she is such a tasty morsel.
Right.
It's pulled him out of the dark dimension he lives in to like feast on her. And she has to combat that, not through like force, but through like working through her own mental issues and trauma and blockage. This storyline has played out for many mutants, right? Their own mental blocks.
And some spider people, Spider-Man too.
It happens, to spider people. It's happened to heroes everywhere, where there's like a mental thing holding you back from your powers. And I don't think it diminishes what happened to her, because I think the gun still worked, but she's an Omega level mutant that is able to tap into her powers. I personally thought that like, she would see what happened on Genosha and be like, that would set her up. It was kind of funny, but like ironic that like she gets her powers back and then sees what happened on Genosha.
Right. I kind of would have liked that actually.
Yeah, I thought the trauma of what she saw there would have like
the need of her friends and her family. Yeah, exactly.
The crisis. It's like you know, what do they say? I tried to quote this recently. God doesn't call those who are qualified; he qualifies those who are called.
Oh,
you know? There's like. I think just the fact that it's just a conversation that she has with herself is what, because it wasn't just her own blockage.
Yeah.
The executioner shot her with a weapon that worked. Yeah. And that's the animators chose to do that. So they made it messy, just logically messy.
She did sit in Storm's Forge's machine. And she does have a line like, I'm glad the machine didn't work.
Yeah.
So I guess in theory, maybe the machine worked a little bit.
But then now she's holding herself. Yeah.
It's just they put so much weight on that random conversation with Jean in the bedroom of sometimes I imagine what life could be like in another world. But like in episode one, when we see her in the desert, she's a badass. And if they just had one moment where she had her own mental blockage when she tried to finish off the Master Mold or finish off a Sentinel, then I'd buy it.
Yeah.
Then I'd buy like, you know what? Storm is kind of holding herself off this season. Instead, they're just kind of doing it episode by episode to just be, to give her this kind of convenient arc. And I think they wanted to do life death with Forge because it is a cool storyline, but they wanted to make it like more suiting to their needs this season, and it forced her to go through these awkward steps and it just wasn't
magical. I would have loved to see Storm kind of living as a human, you know, she's kind of, we only see her, she gets on the bus and then we see her at the bar, and then we see her on this remote farm with just her and Forge having sexy times and then having angry times.
Making love.
And drinking wine, dancing, making
chili.
Love.
Yeah, yeah.
But then an episode where like she's like living in an apartment or whatever, like going to the grocery store, like enjoying life, feeling like, hey, this isn't so bad. And then maybe she sees an injustice and she's unable to like step in and that weighs on her. I kind of would have liked the devil's advocate of like, hey, maybe I am enjoying the pressure of like saving the world has been lifted off of me. I'm just living as a normal human. No one is judging me. No one's like yelling, calling me a beauty or anything like that. Like I'm able to just live. And then through that, seeing that this isn't what I want, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It could have been more interesting, but here we go.
Well, one positive I liked real quick is I liked the, how they brought back the musical cue from give them the forecast when she's coming back. Where you're like, oh shit, here she comes. She's coming back. So that was, I mean, maybe it wasn't earned, but they still try to get you with the feels of that music where I was like, oh, okay, at least we're back, baby. Yeah.
Well, now she has her powers back halfway through the season. Like, we got four episodes left. Let's turn them on, dude. Like, I don't want to, no more standing in the background for Storm. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's back, baby. I want her back. Mm-hmm. Back right now. Okay, one last question. Lilandra brings up a good point where Charles just doesn't message the X-Men to say hello. Like, why has he not reached out to them at all? At all. Like,
yeah, she makes it sound so easy. She says, just send a hollow message.
Just send a hollow message.
You don't have to go back. Just send a hollow message. And that means that opportunity was there the whole year and he didn't do it.
Yeah, it does seem, I mean, like,
I was thinking
he's
like
in a weird headspace.
He left his cell phone Cerebro back, so that's why he can't. He's too far away. But then she's like, no, just send a hollow message. Yeah, and I was like, wait, so you could have done it this entire time.
I don't
want to
buy a
phone. I don't want to buy hollow minutes because this isn't 97.
You never use all the hollow minutes, and then they're sitting on your card.
10-10-3-2 hollow.
Yeah. These kids don't know about the.
They don't know about that.
He doesn't want. To interfere with the, I think he just wants the X-Men to figure out their own problems. Maybe he viewed himself as like just a hindrance on them. Like, I can't be the one to fix their problems. I'm now a graduated senior moving on to college and I'm at Rutgers. I'm having the time of my life right now.
And they're all racist here at Rutgers. So, and I've got to teach them, they're saying the quiet parts out loud.
They got some sexy birds though, these birds.
Ooh, they do some sexy stuff. These metal legs birds. They gave me.
Yeah, oh God.
Just trying to think, what college has like, he's just at the University of Alabama, or he's at Yale, and he's being inducted into the Skulls and Bones, and like, look, we have this creepy ritual where we all get to pee on you, but you have to forget everything about Youngstown, Ohio that you came from. He's like, but why? I have all these memories. Like, we're going to pee on you, and you're going to enjoy it, and you're going to be part of our cult. And yes, we're a little problematic, but that's okay, because that's just our will. And then he's like, well, I'm not going to call Youngstown, Ohio, because I'm too embarrassed to tell them that I smell like piss right now. So that's kind of just the metaphor I'm giving all of you. He's in college. He's at some creepy culty college right now, and he doesn't want to call back because he just wants the people at his high school drama club in Youngstown, Ohio, to just cast their own shit and do their own version of Sweeney Todd that wouldn't be part of his vision.
I mean, I bet a part of it is like, man, it's so easy out here in space. I'm not dealing with, like, you know, the Friends of Humanity.
I'm
not dealing with,
legs.
Like, Eric's bullshit. I'm not dealing with, like, you know, Logan coming in like, oh, I really wish I was with Jean. And he's like, I don't
have time to help you with
your 150 years of memories, my dude. Okay, like, I'm just tired of it. I just want to hang out in space and fuck. And just be, like, free.
Get that haircut going.
Just get my hair back, maybe. Yeah. Maybe it's possible. Do they have Rogaine here on Chandelier? Chandelier. I always get Chandelier and Chandrilla from Star Wars mixed up.
Same.
Doesn't Star Trek have, like, a I think of the Cardassians, maybe. I'm getting them all mixed up.
Chandrilla is the homeworld of
Mon Mothma.
Mon Mothma, that's right. Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Love you, Mom.
Charles just wants to swing on the Chandelier.
Oh, the Chandelier.
Like a Chandelier. Yeah.
Chandelier. Oh,
boy. Now I'm just thinking of Charles Xavier with his robot legs on a big wrecking ball
back.
Swinging back.
Do they give him a spaceship? Does the Lilandra take him back? Is that a long, awkward flight back to Earth? Where he's like, just why don't you park me in the yard? Don't come inside. I don't want to have a whole thing about it. Also, can I keep the legs, please? Definitely, he goes back to the chair, right?
He doesn't get to keep the legs.
Damn, that's cold as ice.
Can we see him playing basketball with everyone with his new legs?
I mean, that would be good. I mean, this
is ripped all of his
legs.
Exactly.
No shirt,
he's like, I got necks.
He's putting Lilandra in like a. He's putting Lilandra in a real tough spot here, right? She calls in everybody.
She sent a space message.
Death Cert has literally got her fucking fist. The high heel, the stiletto.
The high heel, the stiletto. Ooh. In the cheek.
If 10-year-old Brandon had seen that might have unlocked something with that Brandon.
10?
Yeah. Let Death Bird step on my face. Oh, my God. Well, before we wrap up today's episode, as we do every episode here on The Break Room, whether Evan wants to or not, we're going to name our student of the week. That will be the mutant or Shi'ar. Who you feel performed best this episode? Who do you think deserves to be the student of the week this week? I'll give my answer first. It's Deathbird, baby.
Oh!
Deathbird's right, 100%. Deathbird. It is insane that Lilandra would try and force this Terran as an emperor of the Shi'ar Empire, okay? That is fucked up, and she is totally right to invoke the Na's al Ghul. What was it called?
Endasha.
She was totally right to invoke Endasha. Okay? I don't know the politics of the Shi'ar. I'm not going to claim that they're right. They're clearly space racists. But in her defense, this is fucked up. Okay? And Lilandra, you know, she's love crazy. She's happy. Whatever. You can marry this dude, but you don't get to keep being the emperor. If that's you have to make a choice. You can't impose this on your people. That's all I'm gonna say. Student of the week, Deathbird. Yeah, Step on my face.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna agree. I don't care how sexy those bird people are. Yeah, you know this. You know you have morals.
Point. I mean,
it's on point. Literally, figuratively, it's on several points. Several points. I think three to be exact. But no, I'm instead of picking my own, I'm gonna go with Deathbird too. Voiced by my friend. Carrie Kavanoff, congrats. You crushed it.
Incredible. Yeah, Deathbird was great. She was great.
Yeah, even without Carrie, that animation, yeah, very sexy. Bird people, very great.
My student of the week is Nightcrawler.
Oh! He got in the intro!
Who got added to the intro of the episode and did nothing in this episode.
Swords and all.
Made no appearances in this episode except in the intro. And it's such a cool intro, reflected in the saber, and then doing his bampy teleportation.
He was there this episode. He kept bamfing right before the camera got to him.
He
was at every shot.
Just bamfing everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, perfect.
Can I just say real quick? Yeah. I hate how Cyclops has the shittiest font of all the X-Men.
This is just
Comic Sans.
It's a little silly.
And everybody has good. He's the most badass. It's the most badass.
That's why
intro.
He's screaming. He's mad about the time.
He's trying to shoot the font. Get this out of here!
He's like, get this Helvetica out of here! Die!
Yeah. I would change it to Valentino Linotype.
I would take Papyrus.
Make it Papyrus.
Yeah, God.
Papyrus. Put it in bold. Okay, well, that's it for us today. Make sure to subscribe to the Break Room channel right here on YouTube and give us a follow on Twitch, where we do videos like this live. Be sure to follow at Break Room NR on all our social channels. Tom, where can they find you online these days?
Find me on Tom and the Mic on all the things. Come hang out with me and Evan on Threads. We need more people.
Tom and Evan are holding down Threads.
We're keeping it alive.
I'm going to sign up in Mark. Now.
Yeah.
At Brick Room and R on Instagram, Twitter, X, and of course Threads. We'll check you next time. Late escapists, have fun dancing, drinking wine, and making love. Adios.